Our next case of the morning is number 053621, John South against the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Judge Ripple. May it please the court. This case is essentially about the similarly situated prong of the prima facie case. In this particular case, John South had been out on a medical leave of absence from his employment with the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. The district court found that there was not sufficient evidence of a similarly situated employee and granted summary judgment for that reason. The problem that we have with the district court's determination is it drew the contours of that similarly situated prong too narrowly. Essentially, what the court said was we needed to point to someone who had come back from a medical leave of absence, who had been ordered to submit for a medical evaluation, who did not fully comply with the agency's request, and who, unlike South, was not discharged. District court says we can't point to that person. District court's correct. We can't point to that person. But the way that similarly situated prong has been drawn, it makes it impossible for us to point to that particular person.
That's your strongest point, I think. But what about pretext? I mean, even if we didn't concern ourselves with the prima facie case and went to pretext, as I understand it, they determined that he was insubordinate and not following through on numerous requests to submit to a medical examination by a doctor of the agency's choice. I think that's your toughest issue that you have to face here.
I'm glad to hear you feel that way, Judge, because I think, Judge Evans, because I do believe that we can establish that pretext hurdle. In order for us to establish pretext, we have to present sufficient evidence from which a finder of fact could conclude that the justifications offered by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency were not true. Okay? That is what we are required to do.
And you have to show that they believe they were not true. That is a pretext that just completely covered up this retaliatory motive that they had.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You have to show in a pretext case, not just that the reason given is untrue, but that they knew it was untrue. I mean, you can fire somebody because you think they're lazy, and that might not be true, but if you legitimately believe they were lazy, it's not a pretext.
Let me address it this way, Judge Evans. In this particular case, the person who made every single determination, every single move along the way, was a human resources director, a woman by the name of Ann Price. Ann Price's deposition is in the record. She will not answer any questions about why she did what she did. She will not answer questions about what her justifications were for what she did. In fact, she testifies that she has no recollection of John South even filing for an unemployment or for a medical leave of absence. So here we have the decision maker who is telling us, I don't know, I don't remember, I'm not going to talk about it. We went through every single document in her deposition that she had relied upon, every document that had been sent out. She can't respond to it. When I ask her the questions about the particular provisions of the Illinois Administrative Code that they rely upon to give Mr. South, or not to allow Mr. South, or request Mr. South to go on a medical leave, she says, I don't know what that is. She says she has no recollection of anyone else ever being required to go on a medical leave of absence. And the fact of this matter remains, Judge Evans, that John South was not insubordinate. Throughout this proceeding, John South returned from a medical leave of absence. They told him to go through and sit for an independent medical evaluation. He did all of those things. He sat for many, many different medical evaluations. The problem at the end that came up was that they made a request of John South. And by this point in time, John South had been to, I believe, three different doctors that the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency had chosen. He had met with all of them. He had provided them with information. What IEPA wanted John South to do was to sign a medical release that would authorize their doctor, Dr. Sarma, to provide all of his psychiatric records, his entire psychiatric history, which had gone back for more than 10 years, provide all of that information to the EPA. They wanted all of that information. We requested repeatedly, and throughout our supplemental appendix, there are letters back and forth asking, why do you need this information? What is the purpose of this information? No response. No response. They maintain, for example, they need to submit, John needs to sit for this because Dr. Killian's return to work request wasn't sufficient. We addressed that particular issue in May. We had Dr. Killian submit a letter. I said to them, in my letter to them, if you have any more questions about this, please let me know. Please let me know what else there is. And they maintain to this day that they needed to have him sit for these medical evaluations because Dr. Killian's letter was insufficient. That is what is contained in Penny Tender's affidavit as to why they did what they did. But the reality of it is they have never been able to answer the question, how is it that affidavit, or how is it that Dr. Killian's return to work form is inadequate? We addressed the question. We had Dr. Killian write a completely separate letter to them explaining that John was fully capable of returning to work. Fully capable. And saying, if you have any more questions, let us know. They never once contacted us. They never once contacted Dr. Killian. They just continued on with this charade of requesting that John go to these different doctors. He did go to the different doctors. The insubordination came when John refused to sign medical releases that would authorize these physicians to release all of John's psychiatric records to IEPA.
I thought he put a lot of conditions on whether he would submit to this independent medical or not.
Are you talking about Mr. South, Judge?
Yes.
I don't think that that's particularly accurate. Mr. South went, and he went back, and he went back. The only thing that we wrote in our letters was that we wanted John to not release all of his medical records, and we didn't want all of the psychiatric records released from Dr. Killian to the state's doctor. What we did say was Dr. Killian would be more than willing to talk to the state's doctor. Dr. Killian would certainly be willing to provide his whatever information that was needed, but we didn't see the point of providing case notes of a psychiatric history that had gone back for more than 10 years. Dr. Killian was fully prepared to discuss with the state psychiatrist whatever they wanted. And even Dr. Sarma. Dr. Sarma doesn't say in his report, Judge Evans, that John in any way did anything inappropriate. Now, I do see that my warning light is on, and would like to save some time for rebuttal if that's possible. But if you have more questions, Judge Evans, I'm certainly more than willing to answer them now.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Lager.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brett Lagner. I'm an Assistant Illinois Attorney General, and I represent the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency in this matter. Your Honors, this Court should affirm the judgment of the District Court because South failed to establish his prima facie case, and, in the alternative, South failed to show that the Department's reasons for requiring him to submit and obtain an independent medical evaluation and for discharging him for insubordination were pretext for retaliatory motive. To begin with, Your Honors, South sought to establish his case of retaliation in this matter under the indirect approach. As part of that, he was required to meet his prima facie case, which required him to show that similarly situated individuals were treated differently than he was. to show that there was a similarly situated individual, South had to provide evidence that there were other employees who were similar in all material aspects of their employment situation. He completely failed to do this. All South provided was the military interrogation tactic version of name, rank, and serial number. He provided name, job title, and supervisor of every employee other than the six-paragraph affidavit of Shirlene South, who simply said, I've never complained about the agency, and I've never been asked to submit to an independent medical examination. The key thing that's left out in all of this is that South has never shown that any other employee who, for instance, was on medical leave was not asked to submit to an independent medical examination upon return from the leave. And certainly, in determining whether to ask an employee to obtain an independent medical examination, whether that employee was on medical leave is a material aspect of the employment. It's an essential consideration.
Is there a general policy in the agency as to what is required upon coming back from a medical leave?
Yes, Your Honor. To come back from medical leave, the employee has to provide sufficient documentation to indicate that the reasons for the leave are essentially over, and that the employee must provide adequate information that he or she is able to perform the essential functions of the job.
Is that policy stated in a particular document?
That policy in the department's regulations, in particular regulation 303.145 that governs the medical leave and the use of medical leave.
So does it leave open to the discretion of the agency as to whether to require a medical examination by a physician chosen by the agency?
Well, it leaves open to the agency the discretion to require a medical examination, but the physician, and this is very important actually, and I'm glad you bring this up, the physician is chosen by the state employees retirement system, not the agency.
I see.
So it is a state-chosen doctor, but not chosen by this particular state actor.
Is a copy of that regulation in the record?
Your Honor, the regulation has been cited throughout the record and has been quoted at length. I'm not sure if the regulation itself has been reprinted. Not only did South not show that any other employee was on medical leave, he did not show that any other employee had disciplinary problems or a history of insubordination and was not terminated. This court's law is clear that an employee has to show that other employees, when you're operating under the indirect approach, other employees have a similar set of shortcomings. South simply failed to do that. To be sure, he did not have to show another employee was 100% similar to him in absolutely everything, but he did have to show there were other employees who had the same material aspects, and those include similar shortcomings and having been on medical leave. He did not show that, therefore he did not meet his prima facie case, and that ends this case right there. But if this court does find he met his prima facie case, he did not establish that the department's reasons for requiring an independent medical examination or for terminating him for insubordination were pretext, that the department did not truly believe that they needed the independent medical examination because they did not have sufficient evidence, or that the department did not truly believe that South was being insubordinate. Primarily, in addressing arguments that Mr. South is raising on appeal before this court, he asks, how is it that Dr. Killian's return to work form is inadequate? That's the essential point. The fact is that all along, the agency kept asking Dr. Killian for more information. When Dr. Killian filled out his physician statements to show why South could go on leave in the first place, he would state that South had a psychological limitation, but contrary to the plain language in the form, refused to describe what the limitation was. When And on March 12th, when Dr. Killian gives the department a certification of healthcare provider, he states it's going to be 4 to 6 months probably because South cannot perform the essential functions of his job because he cannot handle stress and because he cannot concentrate. Less than a month later, he submits another physician statement that does not include any symptoms for diagnosis, states that South is on medication, but does not explain what that medication is, does not explain what the proposed effects of South's ongoing treatment are, and again, marks that South has a psychological limitation, but does not describe it. All these things are required by that form. In response, Dr. Killian submits a letter saying, well, agency, you misunderstand your own form, and I meant that he had a psychological limitation in the past, but he doesn't have one now. Even if that's the case, he still never explained what the psychological limitation that he consistently marked was. He still never explained what South's symptoms are now. He still never explained what South's treatment is. All of this less than a month after providing a statement to the agency that's going to be 4 to 6 months before South will be able to return to work because he just cannot handle the essential functions of his job. Given all of this, it was reasonable for the department to request an independent medical examination. Then South goes to see Dr. Sarma, for instance, in March. He claims he was cooperative. Dr. Sarma asked South his age. South's reply was, old enough. South refused to answer other questions concerning possible paranoia or his depression. South refused to provide a medical history. Both Dr. Sarma and Dr. Maher, the doctors chosen by the state employee retirement system, said they need complete medical histories before they can judge whether South is able to return for work. This wasn't something the agency cooked up on its own, and it was an arbitrary rule that they imposed simply on South. This was what the doctors were telling them they needed to make the determination of whether this employee was able to return to work after he had just been on medical leave for depression and after he had just submitted doctor statements saying that he could not perform the essential functions of his job. They gave South direct orders to comply and to submit the full release, which South ultimately did after this case was settled and South returned to his job. His union, this case was settled with his union, and as part of his return to work, he submitted the full medical release and was seen by a doctor who cleared him to come back to work as a precondition to his return. His union signed off on that. It's certainly not so unreasonable that the union wouldn't permit it. And it was certainly not so burdensome that South couldn't do it. And it shows that the department really meant to get the complete medical history for the doctors so that the doctors could make a fully informed medical determination on his return from work. There's simply no evidence in the record that suggests the department did not truly believe that. All along, the department was asking for more information to make their determination. That's all they wanted. South admits that he did not comply with the direct orders that he received to provide the full release. He was insubordinate. The department truly believed its reasons for taking the actions it did. Therefore, the agency asked this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Legner. How much time does Mr. Baker have?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I want to address a couple of points that Mr. Legner raised. First of all, with respect to your question, Judge Ripple, the provision that was cited is a portion of the Illinois Administrative Code, so it is of statutory authority and can easily be located. It is cited in its entirety throughout the brief. But I disagree with what Mr. Legner said about what that statute provides. That statute it deals with a time when a person is seeking to go on medical leave, not when someone is returning from medical leave. And Mr. Legner's statements that this was not an arbitrary decision of the department are simply not true. During their deposition, Ms. Price, the particular person who made the decision, who made the request, was asked, even if her office had the authority to request such a thing, question, did you understand that your office had the authority to make that type of request? Answer, no. She herself is saying she didn't believe that they had the authority to make that type of request. She cannot, when asked to identify other individuals who were requested to undergo the same exact thing, she said she didn't know of any. They have never identified one other person who was obligated, when they returned from work, to go through an independent medical evaluation. That has never happened. Judge Evans, I wanted to address one point on the issue of pretext that you had raised with me earlier. And all I would ask the court to do is to look to the most recent Supreme Court decision on pretext, the Reeves decision, where the court said, thus, a plaintiff's prima facie case, combined with sufficient evidence to find that the employer's asserted justification is false, may permit the trier of fact to conclude that the employer unlawfully discriminated. And I submit to this court that we have done that. We have submitted sufficient evidence to present this case to a jury for a full trial. I thank the court, and if there are no further...
Let me ask you before you sit down now. Just taking one aspect of this case, after all the rigmarole on whether you're going to submit to this medical examination, get a letter saying if you don't cooperate with it, you're going to be you could be terminated. And then the doctor, he does report to the doctor, and the doctor sends a letter saying he was uncooperative. He wouldn't tell us anything.
That letter came back in July
2001.
I believe that was the letter from Dr. Maher.
It is.
They came back in July. After he wasn't disciplined until after that, when he was again requested to go
see.
That's
part of the whole picture here, isn't it?
It is, and it isn't. I mean,
could they have fired him at that moment?
No. No, because they couldn't. They didn't have the legal authority. They rely upon the notion that he was insubordinate. There's got to be a lawful order. There's for insubordination to take place. There's a reason for terminating him is that John South was insubordinate. In order for him to be insubordinate, he has to not comply with a lawful order. Their justification is insubordinate. John South was not insubordinate. They had no lawful ability to request him to do what they did. He was fired in the end. He said he would do everything. The only thing he wouldn't do was sign a release to Dr. Sarma that would allow Dr. Sarma to release every single one of his medical records for his psychiatric history to Ann Price at the IEPA. That was the only thing.
But it just seems to me that if you're on a medical leave for medical reasons, for psychiatric reasons, that when you come back, it's certainly not unreasonable to say we want to be sure you're okay, so we want you to go and see Dr. X here.
And, Judge, I agree with you completely. And not only do I agree with you, I think that the IEPA had an obligation to do that. That's not what I am saying. The problem is, and if IEPA, if Ann Price, the person who had made this decision and had ordered that, she's the decision maker, she is the person who is pushing this, if she in her deposition had made those statements, look, John South was returning from a psychiatric leave of absence. I believed that there was a chance that he would be a danger to himself or a danger to coworkers. Therefore, I requested that he go, that he submit to an independent medical evaluation. That is a perfectly legitimate explanation. But under McDonnell Douglas, that's an explanation they have to make. They didn't make that explanation. They are allowing you to infer that that is reasonable. And it's not that it's unreasonable. It is reasonable. But had she said that, Judge Evans, at her deposition, I would have had the opportunity to further inquire, to further question how it was necessary. She didn't say that. So therein lies the problem. I thank the court very much. We ask that the case be reversed and remanded for a full trial.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.